If music be the food of love, play on.
Hello, you musical masticators. Shout out to Harold for this new label that he suggested, so thank you for that. It's what we're going to be calling you listeners from now on. Anyways, today we are looking at Leonard Cohen's 1988 album, I'm Your Man. Cohen's album was released in 1988 and it's marked his transition into a more modern sound with his music. It's one of his most successful albums, and if not, the most successful album reaching number one in multiple European countries.
And in one Rolling Stone review, David Brown wrote about the album as the first Cohen album that can be listened to during the daylight hours. The meal that the album represents is a slow-cooked beef stew with a whiskey, a smoky peaty one. And this is a stovetop beef stew, to first clarify. So we think that Leonard Cohen is not a slow cooker beef stew. He's old school in that pot that's been in the family for years and has collected over time all the flavours from the many dishes that's been cooked.
Exactly, so it's got that extra flavour just from all the, like, its use that it's had.
And that kind of element of being passed down from generations. Mm. So this album is something, probably like one of the most listened to albums in my like car rides of my childhood.
Yeah, so it holds a lot of memories.
Yeah,
for you.
My mum really wanted to make it known that she introduced me to this album at like 8 years old. So shout out to mother there.
Yes.
But again, it's kind of like that element of, you know, this kind of recipe that you can imagine being passed down like from parent to child to parent. Child.
Memories that have stayed, recipes that have stayed in the family forever. And also, we are so excited because we are now going to include recipes with our episodes. So this means that any of you listeners can make this stew at home as long as you have a stove, a pan, and all the ingredients. So we're going to be sharing these recipes on our Instagram, and our Instagram is at if.musicbethefoodoflove. So you guys can create these dishes at home if it suits your fancy. And this is a great meal for the cold winter days that are coming ahead. It is getting bloody freezing. It's a cozy dish.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend making it, especially now it's December 1st, it's Christmas time.
Yeah, and it's like one of those dishes that will just warm you up from the inside. And
oh, yeah.
It tastes like bloody amazing. And it's the kind of meal that you... It's not just a singular meal just for you. It's for your friends and family. And you kind of like invite them over to have some drinks and some of that beef stew whilst you listen to Leonard Cohen's album, I'm Your Man, in the background.
Do it all at the same time. That's so true. With stews, it's really communal because there's so much of it. So it's a really good dish to share with friends and family. Whenever you're feeling like it.
Yeah, and we know that we're obviously in the middle of a pandemic, and depending on where you are, which country you're in, because we know that we have a wide range of listeners all over the world, which is super exciting for us. But obviously there is a pandemic happening, but food and music is always such a great way to like bring people together and enjoy the company of the people around you and just engage in new conversations that you wouldn't usually have and listen to new music that you might not know about and try new dishes of food.
Yeah.
Because you have this time to explore that I don't think I had last year.
No,
I've tried cooking so much more this year, trying new dishes, because I find that I just have the time. Also, we live in like a nice flat and we enjoy each other's company, so we have the time to do it.
Yeah, I think it's also just so sick because food and music is almost a universal language. Everyone shares a kind of passion or love for it in some form or another. And it's so amazing because it brings people together. So yeah, put some tracks on, do some cooking and kind of just spread the love with friends and family. And it also just, it's just something really lovely to do for you and other people. It boosts your mental health so much, especially in the strange circumstances we are in at the minute.
Yeah, and even if you're just, you know, cooking on your own in the kitchen, put on some music that you enjoy, dance around whilst you're chopping your vegetables and cooking your onions. Just enjoy what you're doing. listen to the music that you love and make dishes that just make you happy and make you feel good.
Yeah.
Because it's just so important for that kind of warmth and enjoyment at the moment in the little things.
Yes, every little thing helps.
This Tesco. Is not a Tesco ad, is
it? Yeah, yeah. No, this is not. We're not advertising for Tesco, just to put that in there. Anyways, let's get straight into it. So as we've already stated, the meal... Oh no, have we said the meal? Yeah.
Yeah, we have said the meal.
Honestly, I'm having mental blanks all the time these days. My mind's somewhere else. Anyway, as we said, the meal is a slow-cooked beef stew.
So we, we're going with the first song to look at would be I'm Your Man. This would be the slow-cooked beef element of the dish. We'll play the song for you now, and then we will let you know why we believe this is the beef.
Definitely, and break down into it and analyse it. But here it is.
You want a lover, I'll do anything you ask me to. And if you want another kind of love, I'll wear a mask for you. If you want a partner, take my hand. Or if you want to strike me down in anger, here I stand, I'm your man. If you want a boxer, I will step into the ring for you. And if you want a doctor, I'll examine every inch of you. If you wanna drive, climb inside. Or if you wanna take me for a ride, you know you can. I'm your man. Are the moons too bright? The chains too tight? The beast won't go to sleep. I've been running through these promises to you that I made and I could not keep. Ah, but a man never got a woman back, not by begging on his knees. Or I'd crawl to you, baby, and I'd fall at your feet, and I'd howl at your beauty like a dog in heat. And I'd clog your heart and I'd tear at your sheet. I'd say, please, I'm your man. Got a sleeper moment on the road, I will steer for you. And if you wanna work the street alone, I'll disappear for you. If you want a father
for your child, or only wanna walk with me a while across the sand. I'm your man. If you wanna love him, I'll do anything that you ask me to. And if you want another.
So that was I'm Your Man, the slow cooked beef element of the dish. So we believe that I'm Your Man is the beef because, one, this song is also the name of the album and arguably one of the best songs in the album by a lot of people's choices and where it stood in the Billboard charts for a long time. And his voice in itself just represents this slow-cooked element of the beef, like melting in your mouth.
Yeah.
He has this kind of long drawl that he sings with. It's like speaking but singing at the same time.
It's there's actually like a little like a sway beat to it, and when I listened to it I kind of envisioned it's almost replicating chewing of the meat.
Yeah. Completely.
Which is funny because it's like dun 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 dun, and you want to almost kind of boogie to it, but it's also
but not
it drags
quite,
a bit. It's a slow
not,
dragging
yeah,
beat.
It's not like a boogie, it's like a slow, like sensual dance almost.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So this song within the album isn't a clear cut example of most of the themes that he addresses usually. So you'll find that within his work, and I mean like his massive range of work, he addresses like issues of politics, religion, sexuality, death, isolation, loss, depression, and love in his music. But you get this song, I think, is a more romantic piece of his work, but it's still not romantic because it's this kind of possessed dedication to someone. I'm your man, not your own being.
Not one part of any lyric in the song is it ever addressed what the speaker, being Leonard Cohen or maybe not, whoever the song is and the speaker is representing and symbolizing, and never says what that speaker wants, which is really interesting. And it's weird because I think from the get-go you're thinking, oh wow, this is so beautiful, it's a love song, I'll be your man, I'm here for you. But then there's weird lyrics that kind of actually for me are quite eerie.
Yeah.
And it's also coupled with his low menacing voice.
Yeah, because he says
it kind of puts it, turns it around.
Yeah, he has lyrics like, and I'd howl at your beauty like a dog in heat, and I'd claw at your heart, and I'd tear at your sheet. And it takes on this almost animalistic
violence. It feels super violent.
Yeah, it's not this, because the music suggests something completely different. It's like kind of a hot night dancing with someone you love, but in the lyrics itself it's very dark and brooding, the same way that you see in this album this kind of bleakness that just resonates through the whole album almost.
Yeah, and also I think the kind of the last lyrics that end it is he sings if you want another lover I'll wear a mask for you, and I think that just kind of sums it up as well, because it gives these very controlling, possessive subtleties to the whole entire song, because he's basically saying you can't be with anyone else but me because I am your man. It's weirdly paradoxical, the phrase, because from understanding like face value, I'm your man is saying that Leonard Cohen is being possessed by that other person, but then arguably he's obsessing and possessing this individual. It's really, really interesting. Leonard Cohen is praised for his lyricism. It is just insane.
Yeah, but that is because this album he released when he was 53 years old, and he didn't move into music until he was in his 30s, I think.
He got onto the scene a bit later.
He originally was an established poet and author within society, and he slowly moved into music when he was in the Greenwich Village folk scene. He decided to put his poetry to music. And then with this deadpan delivery that you often hear in his...
Yeah, it's all spoken word almost.
Yeah, he like received the critical success from that a lot. And a lot of people consider him second to Bob Dylan. Even Bob Dylan.
I think Bob Dylan's a poet as well.
Yeah, Bob Dylan did say Leonard Cohen's number one, but Dylan considers himself number zero, so...
Really said that? Mm-hmm. That's amazing, you know, because also Bob Dylan is the only musician to win, I don't know, so the biggest prize in literature. Yeah. I read that off a pub quiz and I was like, oh, wow. Because I think Leonard Cohen as well, just as from that comment that Bob Dylan has made, is up there, arguably. But yeah, if you guys are interested in the lyricism of this artist, he has loads of poetry. And I think they're super interesting to explore.
And if you look at his earlier works before this album, so this was like a monumental album for him just because it was a transitional album into a more synthesized music within his work than before. Earlier work was a lot more folky, and I think you get a strong sense of his poetical ability in his earlier works. You still do now. But there was like a stronger sense, I think, on the lyrics a lot more, whereas now he starts to focus on the music and how he creates the sounds.
Yeah, yeah. Because the sounds are quite, I don't want to say absurdist, but they're like almost strange.
No, they do think they're absurdist.
Yeah. Because it also brings out his voice a lot more. But I think that's probably intended because, I don't know, when it's more simple... And his voice as well is so powerful. I think as a listener, you're focusing so much on those lyrics. And also because it is spoken word, it's slower. You're able to understand it more.
Completely. So shall we move on to the next ingredient and the next song?
Yes, we shall.
So the next song we're looking at is Tower of Song. It is the last song on the album. And we believe this is the Vegetables.
Yeah. I mean, and we just said Vegetables in general. So it could be anything you want with your beef
stew. In the recipe that we are using for this, the vegetables include the onions, the carrots, and the peas. So those are what we consider vegetables, but obviously everyone has a different take on their beef stew. You could add mushrooms if you wanted.
Mushrooms, green beans,
broccoli. You could add anything. Add any goddamn vegetable you want.
Go crazy.
You know, to take a recipe and make it your own is such a major part of cooking.
Yeah.
To like not just stick to what's put in front of you.
So true. Like, be creative.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is Tower of Song.
My friends are gone and my hair is grey. I ache in the places where I used to play. And I'm crazy for love, but I'm not coming home. I'm just paying my rent every day in the Tower of Song. I said to Hank Williams, how lonely does it get? Hank Williams hasn't answered yet, but I hear him coughing all night long. Oh, 100 floors above me in the Tower of Song. Beyond,
tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song. So you can stick your little pins in that voodoo doll. I'm very sorry, baby, doesn't look like me at all. I'm standing by the window where the light is strong. Ah, they don't let a woman kill you, not in the Tower of Song. Say that I've grown bitter, but of this you may be sure. The rich have got their channels in the bedrooms of the poor, and there's a mighty judgment coming, but I may be wrong. You see, you hear these funny voices in the Tower of Song. I see you standing on the other side. I don't know how the river got so wide. I loved you, baby, way back when. And all the bridges are burning that we might have crossed, but I feel so close to everything that we lost. We'll never have to lose it again. Now I bid you farewell, I don't know when I'll be back. They're moving us tomorrow to that tower down the track, but you'll be hearing from me, baby, long after I'm gone. I'll be speaking to you sweetly from a window in the Tower of Song.
That was Tower of Song, and we believe it to be the Vegetables because it kind of has this slow entry and slow feel to it. And as it is the last song on the album, it has this kind of same feel that the veggies have within the dish. So although it's not the main part of the dish, the staple part, the beef or the potatoes, the veggies, they're still crucial to the dish. And it adds that bit of colour, that extra flavour, kind of like the same way Tower of the Song finishes the entire album off.
Yeah, completely. And I think this song is, you know, brings us back to that kind of bleakness, like complete bleakness that this album emanates. Because it has this very wry, fatalistic feel to it. His music addresses the truth of society and kind of how we saw it through this like very bleak lens.
Yeah. I think I found it, when I first listened to it, you need to listen to it a lot of times, because you know you've got the vocals and the kind of the female vocals going do-dum-dum-dum. It seems quite happy, but then when you realise what he's talking about, I don't know, it was really interesting to me because I like the kind of like parallels in the song.
Yeah, and it addresses the ideas of social justice and political themes that he refers to a lot, with the lyrics like, the rich have got their channels in the bedrooms of the poor, and there's a mighty judgment coming. This like impending doom again coming on, but also, you know, a criticism on the way that society functions and the rich.
Yeah, I think it's a very existentialist song. He's kind of, he's almost commenting on life. But what was really interesting, Indra and I were speaking about what exactly is the Tower of Song, because he is commenting on his exterior, on life, on his kind of exterior environment, yet I kind of believe it to be symbolic of his mind. And there is, along with that, this kind of sense of imprisonment, entrapment. When I think of like Tower of Song, I don't know.
Yeah,
he's almost stuck within this tower. And I think as well, in an interview, when he was asked about the meaning of the song, he just said, as a writer, I was stuck. Which is very interesting. It's very ambiguous as well. You're kind of left to, I don't know, guessing what he means by that.
Yeah. Also, I find Leonard Cohen always kind of reminds me of the beat poets in the post-war era. You get that kind of similar feel. They're obviously not the same, and they're very different, like, generations.
But yeah,
there's this need for both of them to explore the human condition and the rejection of the material, but also this acceptance, this almost acceptance of just the way that this is it. You know,
yeah,
and you see that in Leonard Cohen's music. His is, you know, he addresses all of the problems with society. And although this is a political album, with references that are still ever present with inequality and racism, the whole point of the album is that it's not a protest, because there's nothing that can be done anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like a hostile album, that there's no hope left. There's nothing, there's literally nothing to do. The album is all aftermath.
Yeah, there's the bleakness to it as well, because I think even just with the structure of the songs that we've played so far is, yeah, even through the way he sings, it's an, a bleak acceptance of his understanding of his mind and his life, and there's no kind of fight, which... just really striking sense of pathos.
Yeah,
in
he once said, a pessimist is somebody who is waiting for the rain. Me, I'm already wet.
Yeah.
So he's in a state beyond anxiety and pessimism and hope. He's beyond that. It's kind of got this like wisdom to it because of that, you know, that he just...
Yeah, I mean, it's a really big philosophical debate,
isn't
it?
Yeah, and why he's very existentialist as well within his work.
Because then it almost leads you to thinking, is he just saying, what is the point? We are abiding by a consumer, we are kind of living in a consumerist cultural world that is taking us away almost. We're kind of losing ourselves in it.
Oh, completely.
Yeah. It is really interesting, though, because I think in his later life, he really was interested in kind of finding inner peace and inner hope within these thoughts. And he ended up kind of studying at a Zen monastery, I think it was in LA, for around 40. Yeah, in 40, yeah. For 40 years, trying to, I don't want to say self-healing, but... I think he was just in a state of anxiety and hopelessness with himself and the world.
Yeah.
And also his history. I think his parents died when he was very young.
Well, yeah, and he had a lot of trouble with his music. He lost a lot of money. He reached some incredibly low points his career. But he stated that, bringing up the Zen monastery, that he saw that my voice could go low, that I could get deep into the material consciously, that I could explore things. And it comes back to this idea of exploration. And he kind of gives off this almost nomadic lifestyle, this like continuous desire to not just be stuck in one place, to be able to see and feel and experience.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting as well when it comes to music and singing. I mean, I believe this. People can easily argue it against it. But when you sing, it's really coming from within. It's possibly a form of accessing your subconscious.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you're singing, it's just you're kind of propelling forward an emotion that maybe you don't explore. I guess when we carry ourselves through conversation, we can hide it, we can deny it. When you're singing, I think at some points, if you really push it, you're able to access your thoughts and your emotions and
also
kind of understand them a bit
better.
It's
such a release to sing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to just let go in the shower when a song that you love comes on.
Yeah.
It's just very empowering also.
Yeah, it's the same with dancing as well.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
I'm like, it's like, oh, I believe you should have a dance each day.
I think
it's amazing.
It's a necessity for your mental health and human condition is to dance during your life at any point you can. Even if you're just on the street, you know?
Yeah,
I
so
think
true.
It's important when you feel that urge to give into it sometimes, to not be always so rigid in how you believe you need to behave within society. I think you've just got to release sometimes, and you get that with singing and you get that with dancing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, when I did this kind of yoga course, I went traveling in India, and one of the one of the nighttime activities, it was called like a active meditation. So we'd sit on the floor and then they'd play this kind of really distorted, all look chaotic music. And we had to like walk around, run around and just literally say, what does this music make you feel? And it was so much fun. For an hour, people just contorting their bodies and doing strange things to this music. And then like each track would change and everyone did different things. And after, it was the most amazing feeling. It was just like a letting go of all this anxiety, letting go of all these feelings that you had in the day. And it was weird because I think, for me anyway, my understanding of meditation was sitting still and being alone with your thoughts. And in that moment, we were able to kind of like, meditate through dancing.
Well, so
sick.
This is really interesting. My mum is starting to become a meditation instructor at the moment. And the big thing that she keeps telling me is that she's just there to guide you, because meditation is all about you, what you need to do for yourself in the way that's important for your own body, because only you can know who you are, what you need. And so her role is simply as a guide in understanding your breath, understanding your body, the way it moves, the way it reacts and just is. And I think that's really an interesting concept, because there's this need to understand your body.
Yeah.
And through meditation you get this, but meditation is more than just, you know, sat down. It is an exploration in any way that you need.
Yeah. And just to bring it, we've kind of gone on a tangent there, but to bring it back to Leonard Cohen, what I think is possibly quite interesting as well is art in general is a form of self-therapy, but for him, I think his music, he was able to speak about it, but he still had to go to the, like, he still had to do other things, because I think there was so much that he had to understand and accept. I think his music is an acceptance, but clearly there was more that he needed for that self-healing process.
Yeah, but I do, and you get that kind of, that healing and in his voice. Because when you listen to him, you can hear the deepness, the rawness that has been aged by all that he's witnessed and experienced and been through. And it just adds to the bleakness of the music, because you do feel that pain and almost sometimes loss of hope.
Yeah.
But there's also, like, I do think, even though you kind of, I disagree with the loss of hope, actually, that I just said. I'd like to take that back. Because I don't think it is a loss of hope. It's being beyond hope.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Because I don't think at any point he says, well, this is what it's going to be like. What is the point? You know what I mean? It's just actually expressing the darkness and being at one with that darkness, because it's really important to do that in order to see the light.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on.
Yeah, move on to the next. So the next song we're looking at is First We Take Manhattan, and this is the Potatoes in the Dish.
Sentenced me to 20 years of boredom for trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward them. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin. I'm guided by a signal in the heavens. I'm guided by this birthmark on my skin. I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin. You're worried that I just might win. You know the way to stop me, but you don't have the discipline. How many nights I prayed for this, to let my work begin. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin. Don't like your fashion business, mister. And I don't like these drugs that keep you thin. I don't like what happened to my sister. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin. Monkey and the plywood violin.
I practice every night. Now I'm ready. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin. Remember me, I used to live for music. Remember me, I brought your groceries in. Well, it's Father's Day and everybody's wounded. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin.
So that was First We Take Manhattan, which is the potatoes of the dish. Why it's the potatoes, you ask? Because it's stodgy, it's full, it's powerful. It gives that extra kind of oomph that the vegetables do to this dish. I also think that the backing track, the kind of upbeat nature of it, symbolises the potatoes in the dish very well, to be honest.
I also fucking love potatoes. They're such a versatile vegetable. Like, you can have them mashed. You can have them roasted. You can have a jacket potato. You can have sweet potato. You can have crisps. You can have
fries.
Chips. You can have fries. And then with those chips, you could have, like, so many things. It's such a great veggie.
It's very complimentary to loads of things.
Yeah, and it goes so well in a beef stew. And also, First We Take Manhattan is also a great song. So they go hand in hand. I really want potatoes now. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Cravings.
Off track. Anyway, so just some background on the song itself. So this is a really interesting track in the album. It, I think it holds a lot of weight in what it addresses. So this song is considered to be, well, Rolling Stone said that it's a threatening vision of social collapse and a terrorist revenge, which is a really interesting look at it. And it's almost this essence of an apocalyptic future that they're imagining with within the song. So when we're talking about regarding it as the theme is terrorism in the song, I think it's important to note that Cohen is referring less to terrorism on a physical plane, but rather on a mental plane, almost like, would it be an existential plane? No. Was that the word?
I don't know if an existential plane's the right term. It's really confusing, but I think he's playing, as India says, with the idea that terrorism as a term for what it represents and means, there's a duality to it. In our contemporary society, in the past few decades as well, what we see as terrorism, post 9/11, 7/7, like bombings, is a physical, explicit violence enacted.
And also a much more threatening and harmful thing than what I think when he referred to it as carried that much weight back then.
Yeah.
Our societies has experienced terrorism in a much more debilitating way. And so when we listen to that kind of statement, it does sound almost like it's undermining it a bit, I would say. But I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you a quote on Cohen on the song itself, because I think that'll just give a little background on what he's trying to say. So, I remember there was a great poem by Irving Layton that I once read. I'll give you a paraphrase of it. It was, "Well, you guys blow up an occasional airline and kill a few children here and there," he says, "but our terrorists, Jesus, Freud, Marx, Einstein, the whole world is still quaking." And so that kind of summarizes the idea of the terrorism that he's looking at is this upheaval of ideas within society, this changing of thought and how we understand our lives, ourselves, the people around us, how society functions. He's considering this a kind of terrorist of thought,
this almost destroying of something that we once knew and then having to create something new in its wake almost.
Yeah. Kind of when you think of figures like Freud or Jesus, they've created ideas which people have kind of followed their religiously, excuse the pun on that, but like people are consumed by these thoughts. And what I think is really interesting is Cohen's kind of talking about the implicit nature of this terrorism and the idea that I think as well terrorism connotes explicit evil, and maybe there's an under like subtextual understanding to it, and like terrorism is not just explicit violence, but it's implicit and it's done through thought that sometimes as human beings we are unaware of.
Yeah, so I think it's a really interesting song in that sense, and it's a very heavy song as well because of that. It holds a lot of weight, I think, and it's a quite could be quite a controversial statement he's making. So it's quite an interesting song, and it again adds this kind of, this one I think really adds the bleakness because of the subject matter within the album and this kind of apocalyptic nature, as I said, that you get with it, this aftermath rather than the before or during. It's what's left. What is there now kind of thought. And I get that. I think you get that a lot with First We Take Manhattan, and I think it's a really interesting song as well. Just because
I really like it. It's cool as well because you've got the upbeat nature and then the angelic voice in the background, and then what he's saying, and also the chorus as well. It's almost like it's kind of like a shouting nature to it.
True.
Anyway,
we will now move on to the next song, which is "Ain't No Cure for Love," and this is the source of the dish. We are, when we're looking at the sauce, we think it's definitely a spicy sauce. It's got the chili in it. That's because we love spice in our food. We add it to almost everything.
Yes,
and
we
I grew up with a beef stew that my brother would make, and it's probably the spiciest thing I've ever put in my mouth, but I can't not
but it was still
a stew with spice now. So we've made this a spicy sauce.
Yep, so here it is. Ain't No Cure for Love.
Ships are climbing through the sky, the whole air books are open wide. The doctors working day and night, but they'll never ever find that cure for love. See you in the sun.
subway, and I see you on the bus. I see you lying down with me. I see you waking up. I see your hand, I see your hair, your bracelets and your brush. And I call to you, I call to you, but I don't call soft enough. There ain't no cure, there ain't no cure, there ain't no cure for love. I walked into this empty church, I had no place else to go. When the sweetest voice I ever heard whispered to my soul, I don't need to be forgiven for loving you so much. It's written in the scriptures, it's written there in blood. I even heard the angel declare it from above. There ain't no cure, there ain't no cure, there ain't no cure for love. Ships are climbing through the sky, holy books are open wide. The doctor's working day and night, but they'll never ever find that cure. That cure for love.
So that was Ain't No Cure for Love, which is the spicy sauce of the dish. So this song hits us with the saxophone from the absolute beginning, and I think it'd be almost impossible to disagree with me that a saxophone is the sauce just in itself. So this is a sauce for us, a sauce in our beef stew. As I said before, it's a bit spicy, it's got the chilies in it, which it's, I think it really needs. And you've got the dark red colours from the red wine and the tomatoes, and I think that really is the colours of the song, of this song almost.
Yeah, I like that. There's loads of textures when you listen to a saxophone that is almost like the sauce in itself.
So this is an interesting song as well. It's all about AIDS. So you've got the lyrics like, I got you like a habit, there ain't no cure, I'm aching for you, baby. We've got the doctors working day and night, but they'll never ever find that cure for love. And so you're getting this idea of some kind of disease, love, this love representing a disease in the song, and specifically this is regarding HIV and AIDS. Which is quite interesting that he's addressing this kind of stuff in his music. Yeah. And I think it's quite a powerful statement, because it is something that's always looked on quite shamefully, I think, within society, because there's this misunderstanding about it.
Yeah, it's very taboo. And even now, despite Gen Z and like the society we are living now, where everything is quite outwardly spoken, I think AIDS is still something that isn't touched upon as much. And especially because this album was 1988, so yeah, the AIDS epidemic was huge.
It was really like the midst of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And it was, people were so scared of it. There was this like impending doom and fear of what it was. They didn't, you know, I don't know. It's so sad.
But it's so sad, and it really added to the homophobia of the situation at the time, because obviously it's like quite strongly related to the gay community, and so it just added this extra fear factor, which is really interesting that, you know, Cohen is taking the step in his music to address this kind of stuff, and at the age of 53 as well. Respect to the
man. Yeah, damn. Also, what I think is interesting about this song is that kind of from first listening, I didn't realise what it was actually addressing. I just saw it as a love song. But I think that is probably his intention as an artist, because people who are not kind of in the same shoes of these people are kind of judging it and not kind of misunderstanding their situation. I think kind of making it structured as a love song allows for people who are not in that this position to gain perspective.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about most of his music as well is when you listen to it, you don't initially know what it's about. You do have to do like a little bit of research to get
exploring,
understand what it's about, because you know, all of his songs are tackling some form of social injustice.
Yeah. Do you know what was really interesting? There's this one bit when he's speaking and it's very menacing. He says, "I'm in the church," and it's something like, he declares that it's written in the scriptures, and the angels are declaring kind of like his demise. And it's really, really eerie. I don't know. I don't know if that, what that is meaning. Like, is he bringing the kind of religious, I don't know, religion as this kind of idea of discriminatory.
Yeah.
Homosexuals, but also.
But there is a religious aspect to this song. So he does refer to, in an interview, that he refers to when Jesus is on the cross and he's looking down at everyone around him, at, you know, the Romans and the Jews and all of mankind. And he's seeing these, like, various different people, all with differing emotions of indifference or guilt or remorse. And he says... and he understood then finally what it was to be a human. He understood there ain't no cure for love. And I think it's kind of this, again, coming back to the human nature, human condition of people. And this kind of understanding, he's looking through the lens of the Bible and understanding what this human condition is almost. Mm. And I find that really interesting.
I think as well, because he's referring to all humans, no matter what ethnicity, sexuality, kind of just human beings at their core. I find that interesting because, like, the church bit seems to me like from listening to it, it's almost like anti-religion, but the whole idea of it is that religion is showing that we're all the same. Mm-hmm. Love is love. I don't know, because I find that church segment of the song really hard to understand.
It's really hard to understand because he does, you know, the quote itself is quite dark. It's written in the scriptures, it's written there in blood. And you get, as he says, I walked into this empty church.
No place else to go.
Yeah, and so you're getting this, you know, this bleakness almost, but it also, he says, when the sweetest voice I ever heard whispered to my soul. And it's almost like the church, then, the angels are almost forgiving him. They're relieving him of his pain almost.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
His guilt or something. So it's quite an interesting...
It's definitely ambiguous because I think you could read it in a way of like the church rejecting.
Mm.
Rejecting him, the narrator. Or like, yeah. But it also is a kind of like place of solace and... also, I think with that quote that you said, he's also interpreting Christianity as something that is all accepting.
Yeah, which is a really nice interpretation of it as but before we end this little bit on Ain't No Cure for Love, I'd just like to leave you with my one of my favourite lyrics of the song, which is, I need to see you naked in your body and your thought. I just love the vulnerability of it, this kind of nakedness in your whole essence and being. It's not just your body, but it's also your mind, your soul, what everything that makes you you. And I just love that, the way he puts it.
Mm-hmm. It's so true, though. I guess, like, when you love someone, you want to know their entire being. And in cis, everyone, you sometimes always put up a front. And
yeah,
there's sometimes your, like your, I don't know, your there's your ego, your like public self, but like who's your the true you? And sometimes people spend their whole life searching for their true selves. Like, I think it's so hard to be naked in self as well. But it's such a beautiful line as well, and so simple.
Yeah, exactly. And you also, you kind of just want him to see you naked in your body and your thought.
Mm.
You know? You're yes. Like, yes, Leonard.
Yes, Leonard. Say more, honey.
So that was Ain't No Cure for Love, the source of the dish. And this brings us to the seasoning, which is the ever so vital part of your dish if you don't want it to be bland. And that is Take This Waltz.
Now in Vienna, there's 10 pretty women. There's a shoulder where death comes to cry. There's a lobby with 900 windows. There's a tree where the dogs go to die. There's a piece that was torn from the morning, and it hangs in the gallery of frost. Aye, 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 aye. Take this waltz, take this waltz, take this waltz with a clamp on its jaws. I want you on a chair with a dead magazine, in the cave at the tip of the lily, in some hallway where love's never been, on our bed where the moon has been sweating, in a cry filled with footsteps and sand. Take this waltz, take this waltz, take its broken waste in your hand. This waltz, this waltz, this waltz, this waltz, with its very own breath of brandy and death, dragging its tail in the sea. There's a concert hall in Vienna where your mouth had 1,000 reviews. There's a bar where the boys have stopped talking. They've been sentenced to death by the blues. Ah, but who is it climbs to your picture with a garland of freshly cut tears? Take this waltz, take this waltz, take this waltz, it's been dying for years. There's an attic where children are playing, where I've got to lie down with you soon, in a dream of Hungarian lanterns, in the midst of some sweet afternoon. And I'll see what you've chained to your sorrow, all your sheep and your lilies of snow. Aye, 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 aye. Take this waltz, take this waltz, with its all never forget you, you know. This waltz, this waltz, this waltz, this waltz, with its very own breath of brandy and death, dragging its tail in the sea. And I'll dance with
acid while on my shoulder, my mouth on the dew of your thighs, and I'll bury my soul in a scrapbook with the photographs there and the moths, and I'll yield to the flood of your beauty, my cheap violin and my cross, and you'll carry me down on your dancing to the pools that you lift on your wrist. Oh my love, oh my love, take this waltz, take this waltz, it's yours now, it's all that there is.
So that was Take This Waltz, which we believe to be the seasoning. So we reckon Take This Waltz is a seasoning because it's not immediately the main track on the album or the most popular of it, but it's also very vital, as is every element of every dish in a meal. You just can't neglect them.
You mean the seasoning?
Oh no, I think every single dish in a meal. Like the seasoning, like that of the potatoes.
Every single dish in a meal.
Oh, ask every part. Oh, mate. Someone is getting to the end of term and unable to speak English. Anyway, it is vital to the album the same way the seasoning is. And also, with regard to kind of the upbeat tune of the waltz, I think that is very symbolic of the seasoning. It's adding that extra kick to it. Little bit of spice, little bit of this and that, which is just what the seasoning is in the dish. So yeah,
I also you can't have a meal without seasoning.
Yeah, otherwise it's very bland.
Yeah, it's a crime.
Yeah, I used to like not even know what seasoning was until probably last year, my first year of uni. I don't even want to tell you guys what I was eating. I can leave it up to the imagination. But I didn't even use salt and pepper, mate. I was so bad.
I'm really proud of how far you've come, though. You have massively improved.
Oh my gosh. I've got a few mates that have really influenced my cooking. And my mum. And I think lockdown as well. Actually, as well, I just got really into my nutrition because I've got a weird tummy. Hashtag IBS. Your boy. But... rambling again, the main point is seasoning is very important.
Yeah, and Take This Waltz is definitely, I think, a really important part of this album. Mm-hmm. You've got the waltz papa music in the background, and you've got a song which is very focused on love, which is, you know, relevant in some of the songs but not all of them, and so it's really nice to have a song that's about love, but it is about love within death. So he again makes it bleak, but
classic Leonard Cohen.
But it is a really beautiful song in that aspect. Yeah. And so what's really interesting about this song also is that he was inspired by Federico Garcia Lorca, who was a playwright and a poet and an author, and Leonard Cohen was obviously very interested in Garcia, Lorca Garcia.
Yeah. I mean Lorca's, yeah. But essentially, it was kind of an inspiration for Cohen in that
and
sense.
So he took some of the song's lyrics are a loose translation of the poem, and I'm about to
absolutely destroy saying this, but the poem Pequeño Val Vienes, which was by Lorca, and the song was originally released as a part of the 1986 Federico García Lorca tribute album, before he included it in I'm Your Man. So that's quite an interesting thing. And I think you kind of get that because if you read Lorca, his works often are quite imaginative. I don't want to, I'm not quite sure how to say it, but it does have this almost, it's not absurdist, it kind of is like Dali, but in writing.
Yeah, I really like that idea. That's cool.
Surrealist writing, that's the word.
Yeah, I really love when artists take poems and make them into songs. I think it's so sick. There's this other artist who I really want to cover. He's contemporary now. He's real. I think, I don't know if he's really mainstream yet, Nick Mulvey. He has this really interesting poem and makes it into this beautiful song with the guitar, and it completely changes the poem. It's just, it's transposing poetry to music and adding, it adds something completely different to it. I also think when I listen to this song, it sounds really weird to me. And I think it's because the waltz in the background, and you've got like the kind of string quartet, is a huge contrast to his voice.
Yeah. I always loved this song. It used to make me happy as a child.
Yeah. It's really, it's like, I think it's so different. Like when I heard it, you almost think, for me anyway, but I haven't heard anything like it. It almost felt out of place, but I think that's what makes it so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice song. It's a nice lightning one, as lightning as Cohen can get in his music. So it's a nice one to have in the album. And it is like situated roughly in the middle, which just kind of lifts you up from the otherwise disparaging topics. Anyway, so we're gonna do the final song, and the final ingredient to the dish. It's one of my favorite songs in the album, if not my favorite. Everybody Knows, and this is the whiskey. So obviously we have a drink with all our meals, and for Cohen we thought he's a whiskey. Could be a bourbon, but I'm with the scotch. I think he's got that peatiness, that smokiness that you hear in his voice and his music and his themes, you know.
Yeah, it's that I think it's a whiskey as well.
And I think it's a Scottish whiskey. It's not quite as sweet or light as an Irish whiskey. It's got the earthiness that you find in the Scottish.
The earthiness, the rusticness, also the big hit when you just have a little sip, a kind of like empowering.
The fieriness, yeah, but fieriness also like the warming when it, you know, is in your body.
Oh, I love that. The kind of idea when you have a whiskey, it warms you. This idea, he's commenting on life with acceptance. It warms it. There is a sense of hope, a sense of warmth in his music.
Yeah, so this is Everybody Knows.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants box of chocolates and the long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me
night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Now or never, everybody knows that it's me or you, and everybody knows that you live forever. Oh, when you've done a line or two, everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. And everybody knows. And everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows. Scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through, from the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach in Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming upon. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes.
Everybody knows the whiskey, and as I said, I believe it's a scotch. That is also because I am partial to a scotch over a bourbon, and I am also partial to Leonard. So he is a scotch to me. So everybody knows is just, for me, it's inherently the whiskey. When I listen to it, the smokiness of the voice is kind of sensual, like Serge Gainsbourg, but Canadian. And you also get that kick that you get with the scotch, that you get with this song, and the repetition of Everybody Knows and the bleak lyrics with almost a dryness to it.
Yeah.
But you have the Spanish acoustic guitar in the background, which I think just stops it from becoming too somber. It just adds the right counterpoint almost to the music. And
you've also
the lyrics.
Got the strings, they're doing like a staccato refrain. Mm-hmm. It's duh, 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 duh. And although it's so moving, the strings are constantly kind of changing, like on short little notes, which I really love. There's also one bit where he says, the word baby, and it is so sexual. It's like, babe.
Well, he also says, there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes.
Yeah.
Dude. I love that lyric so much.
It's more sexual as well because he's saying
he
it. So like
the way he
instead
says
of singing
it, like,
the word baby or singing that stuff, he speaks it in like.
And there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes.
Yeah, it's really.
And everybody knows
when the way he sings, it's very like it feels and hears to me like almost something being dragged along.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting because it's not spoken, it's not sung, it's literally in between.
Yeah, so I also really like this song. So it's also addresses a number of social issues once again in this music. But I think it's a really good example of just the feel of the album itself. So if you look at the cover of I'm Your Man, it is itself a reflection of this idea of the human condition once again. So it features Cohen actually on behind the scenes of one of the music videos, and he's in this black and white pinstripe suit and sunglasses, classically Cohen, this kind of wise yet charming man that he gives off, and he's just eating a banana, this kind of slapstick fruit. And it's this idea that when you think you have everything worked out, life hands you a banana, and you almost can't help but just laugh at the misery and the shit that's just ensuing around you.
Yeah, and it's also, I don't know, when I'm viewing the cover of the album, you've got the kind of black and white suit and the hat, this kind of connotations of, I don't know, formality and smartness, and then just the banana. And like, bananas are just, when I don't know, I think they're funny, they're happy,
yeah,
and like it's quite I just think really iconic as a photo.
Yeah, and I think it is, you know, the banana just adds so much to this the banana does add so much to this idea of this album. So the album, I think, is still fun and enjoyable at heart. Like the banana, we're being told through the songs over and over again that life is like this terrible joke, but we still enjoy it. The wry lyrics, the dark humour, the deep aching voice. And I really like that about it. And I think you really get that in Everybody Knows. You get these kind of lyrics that are just, they're humorous, but they're also not funny. Mm-hmm. It's like a sad, funny. It's like,
I don't know. Like when I listen to this song, especially, he's almost like the devil in my head, going, "Everybody knows." And I feel like,
oh my
if
god, there,
if the song were to be continued, I could see him going, "Mwah!" like a little laugh, like chuckling, like, "Ha ha, look at you. Everybody knows that life is miserable." Like, I don't know if there were to be. I'd love if there were to be like a part two of Everybody Knows. I could just see like. Him laughing.
He's kind of mockery, like just a mockery watching of the over the world, you know, just laughing at what's happening. And is this, the song is this overview and this kind of chillingly accurate representation of the threats that we are facing then and now. And you do get this feel of like the devil sitting atop everything, kind of looking down at it, like, I've succeeded almost.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a nice way to put it.
Yeah. God, I think it'd be so funny. I see now, kind of after this podcast, I'm going to have Leonard Cohen's voice speaking nothings into my ear.
I would love Leonard Cohen to just be the narrator of my life.
Oh my God, yeah, imagine.
Maybe incredible. R.I.P.
Oh, yeah,
he has passed
away,
but. Yeah, I think he would be my go-to. I just love his voice to just narrate my life story. But so this, I think, this is like a nice song to end on, I think, because it has got that wry humour that you see in the album and in Cohen himself. As, you know, Rolling Stone said, the album is danceable but menacing. And it is danceable, but it's also menacing.
Yeah.
As long as you don't listen into the lyrics too much, you'll be fine. See, I just,
So everybody knows is probably, obviously when I used to listen to it when I was a kid, you don't really understand what all of the songs mean and what's the point of them until you kind of really look into it. And so for me, I loved Everybody Knows because he just, it kind of felt like he could say anything and he'd sound wise. None of the lyrics made sense in my head as a child. Yeah. They didn't flow together.
No,
properly,
but I think even
but you just get this kind of like, I don't know, this almost happiness from the repetition.
You know, adults still listened to it as well. It was played, I'm pretty sure it was played in clubs in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah, and people were dancing to it. So it kind of just proves like there's multifaceted nature to lyrics and songs, and like even in sadness and disparity, there can be a, you can have a dance to that, which yeah. I think is really cool. I think for me anyway, this album encapsulates that a lot, which I think is very cool. It's something that you shouldn't be ashamed to play out loud and dance to. And if it does put a smile on your face, that can also be an effect that it
And you know, creates. Music does often address political issues of the current time. You see it over and over again. It's songs I think are very politicized,
mm-hmm.
and
everything
and
is political.
Art is politicized because I think it's so difficult to not represent your current state of being in your art, you know, and mm-hmm. that's obviously influenced a lot by what's happening in the world around you. And this song is a great one. He does address almost everything. He's got racism, he's got religion, he's got disease, he's got love, he's got death, he's got loss, he's got war. You get it all in this song, but somehow it never just feels like it's over yet. It never feels like life is done.
Yeah.
He does have this ability to kind of give this feeling of continuation.
I think as well, even though he's touching on everything, it's not explicit. It's all implicit and it's subtle. And for me, that's very powerful because he doesn't just go in the first song, well, life is fucking shit. It's like, he uses other words, other ways to portray. And it's not, he's not saying that life is shit in as well. Because I think, I don't know, I think maybe some people will listen to this and be like, well, is he just really sad? Like all of this. But I, with the word choice he uses, the construction and production of the music, there's actually a bigger message that needs to be taken from this album and his music.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And he was a sad person. I think he was a tortured soul, as they say.
Yeah, there's actually this really interesting quote that he said. So he said that depression has often been the general background of my daily life. My feeling is that whatever I did was in spite of that, not because of it. It wasn't the depression that was the engine of my work. That was just the sea I swam in. Yeah, which is really interesting because this cross-referencing to a very different artist that we did touch on upon on our radio show last year, but there is Mac Miller.
Yeah,
in his recent album before his death was called Swimming, and another reference as well is you've got Laura Carner, Not Waving But Drowning, which is taken from an amazing poet, Stevie Smith. And I love this, like, yeah, Not Waving But Drowning, this kind of, that was just the sea I swam in. Mental health, bad mental health and depression or dark thoughts sometimes don't propel you to do those things. You are sometimes just part of that. And that can almost be a strength, using anxiety and sadness as a form of development.
And also just surviving. That's a feat in itself, you know? You can have so much going on and just surviving, getting through it. And you get this feeling with Cohen that he is surviving. He's just, I think he's just dealing with it.
Yeah.
And he's taking what's coming, and that's quite a nice, it's quite a nice, good way to just see yourself as almost a survivor of the shit that we go through.
Yeah. And also not to be disheartened or like, I don't know, put yourself down because you are sad, because it is natural. We are human beings. We're going to experience so many emotions. And I think I really like the idea of acceptance of our emotions. And I think that's such a powerful message to take from this album. But anyway.
Anyway, so we will end this podcast on a nice note of the hope and the good dancing times you can have to I'm Your Man.
Yeah, and also just even though we are going through a global pandemic, as Lennon Coleman probably comment upon this, there is something good that can come out of this in some form or another. It is incredibly hard. The world has just kind of gone into the... It's something that is unimaginable. I wouldn't have thought this could have happened. But despite all this, something good can happen.
Yeah.
Something good we can find within ourselves.
It's important not to dwell on it, to take enjoyment in the little things, yeah. In the little lines in his songs that... Just a little ray of happiness that shine through the somber, otherwise somber song.
Exactly.
But anyway, so that was I'm Your Man, and
yes.
It's a slow cooked beef stew with a whiskey. And we will put our recipe up on the Instagram soon. So you guys can try out making the dish if it so pleases you.
Anyways, have a lovely week.
This was Izzy in India.
And we are If Music Be the Food of Love.